All right, Reggie, what do you say we make a little podcast magic today, huh? All right, so I will give you the three S's, I will give you the countdown, and we will do a podcast. Put it in the book, episode 517. Ready to go? Okay, here we go. Star, smile, strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but I always say it's also good to get out there and tell your friends, say your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section. You hit the prompt for this podcast, and there you will find podcast after podcast from the past. If you like what you listen to today, then you'll certainly like to listen to what we've done in the past. So go back there and listen. Scroll down and load more. Scroll down and load more. Find out where we've been so you know where we're going. And right now, we're going to episode 517. So, if anybody listening to this podcast lives in the United States, and that's the thing about this whole podcast thing, you know, yeah, there's a good chance that most of the people listening to this podcast, I don't know how many do, but those who do, it's a good chance that most of the people who listen are in the United States, but that doesn't mean they have to be. It's a strange concept to think. I mean, you know, coming from a radio background, you're limited, obviously, by the strength of your signal. And having been on major radio stations with very, large signals, WGN Radio, for example, has a 50,000-watt is a 50,000-watt station, so the coverage on that, as I've said many times, depending on the time of day, sometimes in the evening, just through no extra effort by anybody, this signal can go to, I think they said at one time, I remember, 36 states. I remember walking into the program director's office and seeing this map, and it showed the coverage of where the signal was going. And it was all over the place. It was amazing. 36 out of 50 states. That's not bad. And but on this, with the podcast, I mean, in theory, it could be anywhere. It could be in the United States. It could be in the southern hemisphere. It could be in Antarctica. It could be in Africa. It could be anywhere where there's internet access and somebody knows to look for it. You can find it. It's a very weird concept. But this is actually probably what I want to talk about today. It's probably more of a global issue, really, when you talk about it. But here in the United States, we're hearing a lot of the biggest reaction to it. Obviously, I'm talking about gas prices over the last month or so, ever since the United States went into Iran. And I don't know if the expectations were going to be that the gas prices were going to be go up that fast and go and stay there for this long. And we're still in the midst of it. Hopefully things will be done soon and we can get back to normality. Gas prices have always been the bane of everybody's existence. And they continue to be. And it's kind of a sticker shock. There's no question about that. When you go to the gas station and you go to fill up your tank, I always try to fill up my tank at about half. It's kind of a pain, because you do have to go to the gas station more often, but at least you don't get hit with that big number. You know, when you fill up your tank, if you let your tank go to a quarter of a tank left or even less, you start to get into that danger zone. And believe me, I've had my moments when I've let it go past the danger zone and even to the point of the car won't go anymore. Thankfully, I've learned my lesson as I've gotten older not to do that. But I've run out of gas. I don't know why I used to play games with that. When I was younger, I used to play games with that, and I'm not sure why. It was just laziness of not going to the gas station and having to get out in the car. And it wasn't just always in the winter. You're like, well, it's cold. Just laziness. But once again, I've always said, we always do stupid things. The goal is to not repeat the bad decisions. We all make bad decisions in our life. The goal is to not make them on a regular basis. And I am happy to say that I have learned that lesson, having run out of gas for no, you know, once again, there are things that sometimes we cannot prevent, and there are things that we can prevent. And there's enough unpreventable things that can happen to us on a daily basis that we should at least cover our bases on the things that we can prevent. And running out of gas, I mean, as I said, I'm I am guilty of it, and even more than once, and even more than twice in my life, though. I mean, not in a week, and not consecutively. But I would have to say, in my driving career, which is several decades old now, I probably ran out of gas maybe three or four times, maybe five times. But it only takes one time to realize how stupid it is. And oh my gosh, do you curse yourself? It's just, at least I did. But I'm proud to say that I don't think I've run out of gas now in 25 or 26 years. I've learned my lesson. It's been decades now since I have. You know, you're younger and you're so busy. You know, we're so busy. Oh, I can't stop. And you pass a gas. It's one thing if you live in a rural area. I mean, I have no excuse for having ever run out of gas. I'm not talking about driving in rural areas. I'm driving in urban, metropolitan, suburban areas. There's a gas station every 5 seconds, and I'm passing them as I'm slowly using my gas, and to run out of gas, it was just dumb. Thankfully, I never got into a dangerous situation when I ran out of gas. But I ran out of gas enough times that I actually have at least three. I had to buy those bad gas, those bad red, plastic gas tank. I don't even know if they sell them anymore, but I used to, I've still got about two or three of them in my garage in a bin. I don't know why, because they're not even in my car. So I don't even know. I don't even know why I have them. I don't know if they're just like mementos of remembering how stupid I was, because I don't even have a gas can in my car. I don't have one in the trunk. I don't even know what they're doing in there. They are kind of maybe just mementos of really past stupidity and bad decisions. But I had to, don't forget, you have to buy your gas, but first you have to buy the gas can and the gas station, they know they've got you. So those things aren't cheap, and it's only a gallon. So that's a ripoff. You pay probably $5 or $6 or $7, maybe now maybe $10 for the gas can. It's plastic. It's not a can, but still. And then you fill that up with 1 gallon of gas. Big deal. To either get you someplace, to get back, and then you drive there and with that gallon that you bought, and then you fill up again. And you get hit for the big fill up of your gallon of, fill up your tank. So not only is it stupid, is it preventable, but it's also expensive. So maybe I just kept the cans just as a, what the hell, I bought the darn things. But as I say, I don't even keep one of them in my car in case. Because I'm very confident now that I will not run out of gas ever again. I am very diligent and always looking at my gas. supply and deciding. And now, as I say, to the point where I try to fill up at half a gallon. So this way, there's no questions. I'm not going to run out of gas. I'm overcompensating for my bad decisions in the past. And as I said before, I'm not getting hit with a big, bill when you fill it up as opposed to filling up halfway. So, yeah, you have to go to the gas station a little more than you might. But at least you have, for me, the goal in life is POM. POM. And what am I saying by POM? Some of you may have already figured it out. Peace of mind. Peace of mind. There is nothing better, I believe, than peace of mind. One of the rules that I have here, just in our supplies in the house, right? You know, you go to the grocery store, and I'm not talking about food. I'm talking about, you know, your supplies, you know, your paper towels and, you know, your soaps and all those things that you need on a daily basis, you know, all those. And you don't get them, you don't have to buy them every day, right? But you have to buy them then. And my rule is the two rule is to always, once again, maybe I'm overcompensating. Maybe this is me going to the gas station at a half a tank as opposed to a quarter of a tank. But I always buy two of everything. I always want to have two of, if it's, toothpastes. Two tubes of toothpaste always in the closet where we have all that stuff. Two toothpaste, not one, two. Always be ready. So when that one, you know, these are things you use every day. It's not, I mean, some of the things, I'm not everything, but the stuff that you use every day, you know, your toothpastes, your floss, you know, your shampoo, your mouthwash, you know, your household items, you know, if you've got, like, you know, air fresheners or Febreze or dishwashing soap or dishwashing tablets or your laundry your pods or whatever you might have with that. All those kinds of things. Paper towels, I don't have two, but I usually have one and a half. You know, toilet paper, those things. I always have two. Always have a spare. Because those things run out. And sometimes, you know, we all know the way that we get. We know when that toothpaste is running out. But, you know, I've got errands to run, and I don't know if I'm going to get to the store in the next couple of days. And suddenly, whatever that is, thing that you use on a daily basis, runs out. It runs out. You use it every day. And so my rule is to get at least two, to have at least the one you're using and one in reserve. And sometimes even the one I'm using and two in reserve. Yeah. Okay, call me crazy, call me nuts. But I would rather have one in the tank there, just one sitting there waiting. So when I'm running out of floss, you never know with floss, it's hard to tell, for instance, and you pull that floss and all of a sudden, whoa, your hand goes flying, you know, farther than it used to because the floss is gone. I can floss. I can floss unless I don't go to the store that day to pick up a new floss. I go to the cabinet and there's another floss. So, you know, razor blades, you know, for men who have to shave, as I said, you know, shampoo. I like to have two at least. And sometimes I have the one I'm using and even two in the cabinet. And as I use one, then I buy the new one. Always have at least one, you know, in storage, if you will. Always buy two. And that's the reason why I fill up my gas tank at half. I know I'm not going to run out of gas. And so I'm happy to say, even though I certainly have in my, and I'm laughing because I'm thinking about some of the situations that I was in, and they were so stupid. And I'll tell you one of the stories because it's kind of interesting. But there is no excuse. I'm sorry. There is no excuse to ever run out of gas except you're lazy. And if you've got a good excuse, then you tell me, Facebook me, and tell me why you ran out of gas and why you couldn't help it. You can't tell me that you didn't pass a gas station somewhere. You know you did. You know you did. And like I said, when I ran out of gas, I was no excuse. I was driving in a metropolitan area, constantly surrounded by gas tanks or gas stations. So, but anyway, but yeah, so in the last month or so, we've certainly seen, going on 2 months now, really, we've seen gas prices just skyrocket. They were actually getting down. It was actually like, wow, gas wasn't even a big deal. At some points, it was even under $3, which, you know, is become, you know, that's an oddity now. I'm old enough to remember. I wasn't driving. It didn't impact me at all because I wasn't driving and I wasn't buying the gas. But I was young enough. I was young, but I was old enough, I should say, to remember in the 70s the gas, the energy crisis, and the gas crisis. I remember watching the news. And I remember driving, not driving myself, but being in a car and driving past the long lines at the gas stations, seeing gas station signs that said, we have no gas. That was real. In the 70s, there was a gas shortage. Now, I don't know if it was, once again, I was too young to know the politics involved or the realities involved. I don't know if there was truly a worldwide gas shortage. I don't know if there was politics involved. I don't know if there were embargoes being placed. I don't know if there were tensions. I was too young to understand the geopolitical aspects of why there was an oil crisis. I do know that we were, beholden to the Middle East for our gas. And to some extent, we still are. What's interesting, and I don't know if you know this or not, but I read this, and I thought it was interesting enough that I thought I should maybe share this with you, because maybe some people don't understand why the gas prices are so high right now. Because it seems contradictory, if you think about it. If you listen to the news, all we've been hearing for the last year and a half or so is how we are now oil independent. We are energy and oil independent. Now that's kind of the phrase that we've been hearing. And President Trump ran on the slogan of drill, baby, drill. We're going to drill in the United States. We've got enough. We have got more. If we've got as much at very least, if not more, oil in under our ground in this country than they do in the Middle East and anywhere in the world. The difference is that we have more regulations, we have more concerns about environment, of different issues surrounding the oil digging and drilling. And so that's why we don't drill, or at least in the past, we haven't drilled in certain areas, like out in the oceans, because it could, you know, like in Alaska, these pristine oceans. Ours are more environmentally driven. But we apparently, under geographically and geology-wise, we have a lot of oil under our land. And so what we hear, you know, like I said, President Trump said, drill, baby, drill. And what we're saying is that we are drilling and we are getting more oil than we've ever had. We are energy independent. Now, we don't rely on the Middle East for our oil. That's kind of true. It's true in a sense that we have huge, when we say we don't rely on them for oil, It's true that we have huge reserves of oil now, that because we are drilling more than we ever have. However, so people say, well, then what's the big deal? Why, if we're not reliant on Iran and the Middle East for oil, then why are our gas prices high? I mean, there's all this talk about the Strait of Hormuz. And now, I mean, that's going to be, you know, at the end of the year, they always say, well, what was the big word of the year? You know, at the end of the year, they always do these end of the year kind of surveys. And a lot of times, I don't know if it's an encyclopedia company or some word related, you know, organization puts out, well, this is the word. These are the words that were used most in the past year. And they're usually slang words, like new things that have been, you know, brought into the lexicon, and people start using. I'm sure super used to be, and now it's everywhere. But at one time, it was probably one of the first, the big hip words, because everybody at the time didn't use the word super before everything, which drives me crazy. And I never use that. I mean, that's just, to me, that's really lazy, and it sounds like you're 5 years old when you say it. But, you know, it's a part of the language, and now we've got adults saying super, it's really super tasty. And I'm just, I did a podcast on the use of the word super several years ago, and much to my chagrin, it had no impact at all. In fact, the word super now is like a part of, it's an adjective, which means absolutely nothing. Don't get me on my soapbox on super. It drives me crazy. But anyway, I'm sure that when they do the end of the year, you know, what were the words that were used most? I'm sure that her moose, not his moose, her moose, or Hormuz, but the Strait of Hormuz is going to be one of those words that was most used in our language in 2026. There's no doubt about that. We went from never hearing of the Strait of Hormuz, and if we did, it was in passing. And now every day, Strait of Hormuz, Strait of Hormuz, Strait of Hormuz. Wow. And did you ever see that on a map? I mean, it's amazing how this little strip of real estate, it looks like... I mean, it looks like the Panama Canal or something. It's a small little thing, and it's causing worldwide, you know, controversy and damage and high prices. But why is the question? People say, why? If President Trump says that we've got all this oil, we're energy independent, we're drilling, baby, drilling, then why are our gas prices going up? We should be able to use our reserves, right? Well, on the face of it, that you are not wrong. That makes perfect sense. Except reality always has to come into play. That damn reality, right? So here's the reality of the situation and why that Strait of Hormuz is so important, not only to the world, you know, China, Europe. I mean, most of the world gets their oil from the Middle East. We don't need, in theory, to get our oil from them, but yes, we do in reality. And here's why. While yes, we have oil underneath our land in the United States, and now we are drilling more than ever, and we have more oil, we don't have gas. And you say, Jim, what are you talking about? Okay, let me explain. When oil comes out of the ground, it is not gasoline. What's the key word we always hear about? Refineries. Refineries, right? Oil refineries. Well, there's a meaning to that word. We're hearing it. We understand. We hear, oh, there's a gas shortage, or price is going up because there was an accident at a refinery. And we hear that phrase. We hear it on the news. But I don't know how many times we really understand what it means. Well, let me once again, I'm no oil genius, but I was a little interested into why our gas prices are high when we don't when we supposedly have all this oil. Well, yes, we have oil, but we don't have gas. There are several, the thing is, oil needs to be refined before it becomes the petroleum and the gas that we put into our car. It's a raw material. It doesn't come out of the ground as gasoline for our cars. It needs to be treated. It needs to be, the R word, refined. That's the word. That's why refineries are so important in this whole gasoline world and gasoline prices and gasoline supplies. Refineries. That's the key word. And the key word is that the kind of oil that we have here in the United States needs to be refined. Apparently, there are several kinds of oil, of pure crude oil. We've heard the word crude oil, right? So that just means the oil in the ground, it's crude. It hasn't been refined. It's not gasoline yet. Think of, and it was a very good explanation and a good, kind of example or metaphor, so I'll use it. So think of cows, cattle versus steaks or hamburgers, right? You don't eat a cow. You have to get the meat from the cow that makes your steaks and makes your hamburgers, but the cow itself needs to be processed before that ground beef or that steak appears in your store, right? So the fact of the matter is we have a lot of cows in the United States. If you're going to use the oil, we have a lot of cows, but those cows still need to be processed in order for us to get the products, the steaks, the meats to use. Same thing here. United States has a lot of oil under the ground, and we are now drilling for it more than we ever have, but we don't have enough of the refineries in order to process the crude oil that is under our land. We don't have as many of those to turn into gasoline. Why is that? Because for the most part, we weren't drilling. And so the refineries that we have here are made to refine a thicker, gooey kind of oil, which comes from the Middle East. Because most of our supplies were coming from the Middle East. So it made sense that we would make refineries that could process this Middle Eastern crude oil or this more international crude oil, which is thicker and needs a different refinery process than the kind of oil that apparently we have here in the United States. Our crude oil apparently is lighter. It's not as goopy. It's thinner. And so that takes a different kind of refinery. So when the oil companies were building, we were importing our gas from the Middle East because we needed it in major supplies, and it was this thicker, goopy gas or oil from the Middle East. And so we built obviously refineries that were made to refine this thicker gas, this thicker oil to turn into gasoline. There are some, for instance, once again, this example that I was hearing about, Texas, where a lot of our oil is, right? As I said, it's thinner. Texas, the oil prices are always cheaper in Texas. Why? Because the oil was right there. There was no need to go anywhere else for the oil. There's the source. So refineries built in Texas, for instance, were built to refine the Texas kind of oil, the thinner oil, not the imported oil. from the Middle East, but this thinner oil. So in Texas, they have the refineries to transform the crude oil that they get from Texas into gasoline. So the prices are cheaper because A, the refineries are there. You're closer to the source of the oil. You don't have to pay to have it transported halfway around the world. It's right in the state. And so all those little steps all cost money. And so here's the great irony. Because we don't have a lot of refineries that can process the kind of oil that we get from the United States, because historically we haven't drilled as much. We have been dependent on the Middle East and other countries, Venezuela and things like that, for oil, which is a thicker oil, which needs to be refined. So the refineries that we have here in the United States are geared to the imported oil, not the domestic oil, because for the most part, we were always importing it. We weren't using as much. Yes, we had some, but not in the numbers that we use it. So yes, we were dependent on Middle Eastern oil for the last 100 years or whatever, certainly it's in the last 50, 60 or 70 or 80 years since cars have become such a major part of our country, and we weren't drilling and here and using our own oil. We were importing it because we needed it in such massive quantities, and we didn't want to drill in our own country, or perhaps we didn't even know where it was. But now we do know, and we are drilling. And so it made sense then from a business standpoint and a use standpoint that if you're going to build these oil refineries, you would build these refineries in the United States that would be able to process the oil that you use most, that you're importing. And yes, there'd be some that could refine the oil that is from here, but the numbers just weren't as big. So we don't have as many refineries that can process the oil that we get. Now, we're energy independent. How then? I mean, we're not energy independent on usage, but we are independent on our supply. And so what we do is we drill that oil and we sell it on the world market. So the oil now that we are drilling, and maybe we would start, and if this policy in the United States continues, and we'll see if the next administration, I'm sure if a Democratic administration comes in, I'm sure that they will, as they have most of the time, curtailed the drilling, especially with environmental concerns. So we'll see if this becomes something that was temporary in the United States under Donald Trump, or whether it continues to be the United States way of doing it, of drilling in these areas. I would assume that a lot of the drilling that we're doing, if we're doing it in environmentally questionable areas, I'm sure a Democratic president would get rid of that. But the problem, or the reality is that we are making more, we are independent from the standpoint that we are now a major player in the world market of selling it. It's a revenue generator. The oil that we are producing in this country and putting out into the world, because other countries use that and they have refineries for that. Ours, you know, there are those, we use so much that we have to go to the Middle East to use that, because they've got so much and we weren't, using it. Other countries use our kind of oil. So our oil is still, any oil in the world is valuable. It's just that we were so dependent for so many decades on the thicker Middle Eastern oil that we built refineries here that would process that more than we have to process our own. So yes, we are drilling and we are producing more oil. It's just that oil that we're producing isn't used in the United States as much. It's a revenue generator. We're selling it on the world market. We're selling it to the world. It's an advantage for us. We're a player now in the world market of oil, but we're not necessarily drilling it to use it. We're drilling it to sell it. And so That's why we are affected by the Strait of Hormuz right now, because our oil supply, we use so much, you know, that car, you know, those three cars that you have, or those two cars that many people have, everybody, we use so much that we just don't have the capacity or the capability right now. We'll see if that changes. I'm sure oil companies are not going to go and spend billions to build refineries for American type of oil if they're not confident that we're going to continue to drill here and create the kinds of amounts that would make its business sense for them. Or in 2.5 years, are we going to, or a year and a half, are we going to go back and stop drilling and be dependent again, and not have that oil? Why should they build refineries once again to refine oil that we're not using? So as it stands right now, the oil that we are producing is an asset from a revenue standpoint, but not so much from a usage standpoint. So we are dependent on that oil coming out of the Strait of Hormuz, and we are still susceptible to the world market of oil in terms of the prices, because we're still using Middle East oil. We're now producing oil and selling it as a revenue source for our country, which is good, but it's not really helping us in our usage. Our usage is so immense. We use so much oil on a daily basis that we, you know, the infrastructure in this country now, who knows? As I said, if it remains something that the next administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat, continues, that might change over the years. But as it stands right now, we are in that little limbo of area to say, okay, you know, yeah, okay, this is fine, but the oil companies are still going, well, I'm not going to spend billions of dollars on a refinery that in a year and a half or so is going to be obsolete. So yes, we are energy independent in terms of oil. We are drilling, we are producing more oil, but we are using it as a revenue source, not as a usage source. We are still using the thicker oil from other countries. That's why Venezuela was so key, because Venezuela has that thick oil. So if we can get a better price on oil from Venezuela, then our oil prices would go down in theory. The reason why Donald Trump and people in his administration are saying that oil prices will go down once Iran does not have control of the Strait of Hormuz anymore is that then the oil will be produced there and it'll be favorable for the rest of the world. But that's not the case right now. And so we're seeing oil prices go up. So I hope that helps. If you were like, well, wait a minute, why aren't our oil prices cheaper? Think of it as I said before, think of it as oil as cattle. And you have all these cows, you have all these cattle. And you say, well, we've got all these cattle. Why are beef prices so high? We have all this cattle. Well, because we don't have, in theory, if you're going to make the comparison, we don't have, if it's oil and refineries, say it's cattle and slaughterhouses, we don't have the types of slaughterhouses or as many slaughterhouses here to process the cattle to get the meat. If it's oil, we don't have the refineries here to process the kind of oil that we need, because we have, our use is so high, we can't rely on, we've never relied on our gas supply to sustain us. We've always relied on imported gas or imported oil. And the imported oil is different than the kind of oil that's here in the United States. So it made sense. We made refineries here to refine imported oil. So now the question will be, will we build refineries in large numbers to refine American oil. Well, we'll see if the policies remain intact. So that's why our gas prices are going up. We're still dependent on the worldwide gas supply and the worldwide prices of that gas or that oil. So if the barrels of oil on the world market are they should be in the 60s or 50s or 40s, that would be great. But if there are 100, then our gas prices are going to go up. And they're going up because there's not enough oil coming out of the Strait of Hormuz. And so there's a shortage. Like everything else in this world, there's very few shortages of anything. What makes a shortage are all of our bickerings. All of this, this world would sustain us very well if people weren't here. We are the problem. The supplies are not the problem. As it is with everything, we are the problem. There's enough oil in the world to satisfy everybody, for everybody to pay a dollar, to pay 20 cents a gallon. Except that we are at odds with Middle Eastern countries. They realize they have this valuable asset. They've raised the price. What are we supposed to do? That's why the Middle East are rolling in money. And that's why one reason why I think President Trump says, well, why are we letting them roll in money? We've got gas here. Let us do it. But we're selling ours because we can't refine ours. So we're drilling for revenue, not drilling for use. Maybe we will use it. But that's why our gas prices, made simply, in fact, and I'm sure there's more technical things about it, but in generally, that's why our prices are going up. We're still dependent on the Middle East for the oil that we use. We're energy independent and oil independent for the oil that we produce and that we sell, but not for what we use. We're in that limbo period now. So that's why our gas prices are going up. But what I really wanted to talk about is there is sticker shock, right? I mean, we all drive and we all have places to go. We go to work. We have our regular routines. We have work. We have errands. We visit friends. We visit families. We go on vacations. There are things that we do on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, right? That are just parts of our lives, and it's dependent on transportation. And while a lot of people use public transportation and they're always, you know, telling us to use, public transportation, you know, for parking and saving on energy, and I get that. But at the same time, we like to go when we want to go. And that's the way Americans have always been. We don't like to be told or we don't like to wait. And so we have two or three cars. Some families everybody can go where they want. And so our gas usage is over the top. But that's that we're willing to pay for that until this, as I said before, I remember, once again, in my day, not only I'm old enough to remember in the 60s, or in the 70s, when there were these gas lines. I mean, gas stations, I mean, the gas shortage, as I said, I don't know, I haven't looked into that, whether it was artificially created or if it was real. If there really was a gas shortage or there's just a shortage of gas that was coming over to us. But the reality is gas stations, especially in big cities, and maybe even in small cities, because the gas usage was in so much in big cities that the oil tanks and the trucks would have to serve the biggest populations. And even there was a shortage for the big population. So I can only imagine what it was like in smaller towns or in rural towns at that time. As I said, I was a young kid. I didn't understand it. I wasn't going and pumping gas. And here's another thing in my day. I'm old enough to remember that when you went to a gas station, it wasn't self-serve. Yeah. I'm old enough to remember when you went to a gas station you ran over these two little rubber tubes that were on the grass that would ring a bell, ding, ding. And that would let the guy in the gas station know to run out and fill your tank for you. Could you imagine that in today's world? Going to a gas station and having somebody come and fill your tank, running over these little things that would ring a bell and that would tell the guy inside to come out and pump your gas? The guys that work in a gas station now in the convenience store / gas station, I don't even know if they're able to come out of those things behind all the heavy glass that they're behind. There are no more mechanics at gas stations. Those days are over for the most part. And the guys that work in the gas station themselves, it's basically a convenience store that gas is just one of the items. There's more signs for hot dogs and pizza and snacks and pop than there is for gas when you go to a gas station now. And the guys behind the counter that you pay, I mean, they're barricaded behind thick bulletproof glass, and I'm sure doors that lock from the inside. They're not coming out they're not coming out of there for 8 hours. But yeah, there used to be that was a big thing in the late 70s and early 80s. Self-serve. That was a new concept. In fact, even at some gas stations, people still did not want to pump their own gas. And so there were, if there had like, you know, most smaller gas, now there's got, you know, millions of pumps. I mean, you know, but back in my day, the average gas station probably had some were really small. They only had three pumps and the big ones had six. That was a big deal. Now there's like, you know, they've put pumps all over those in a place. There's, you know, 15 or whatever there might be. But back when I was a little kid, there were some gas stations that just survived on maybe two or three pumps. Maybe five or six. But a lot of them just had three or two. That's why they could fill up your gas. It wasn't, you know, crazy. But, you know, now there's no way you could, you need a whole fleet of people to fill up gas. But my point is, if you were a gas station with two lanes, they would have one lane was self-serve and one lane was pump. So if you didn't want to get out of your car, you would go to the right lane and ding, ding, your car would run over the little tubes there that would alert and the guy would come out. But if you were in self-serve, you got out and pumped it yourself. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to a drive up now, I mean, you don't even see that anymore. You know, a lot of times, you know, banks have these remote locations where they have an ATM or they have the glass area where you can go and actually talk to a teller. Well, now a lot of those are gone too, but they used to, it was the same concept. Did you want to talk to somebody when you went to this remote location for your bank? You pulled into that line or you went to the ATM. Same thing with gas stations in the late 70s, early 80s. It was either, fill it up or self-serve. And then, of course, that just went away from everybody got used to it. And the gas stations were like, why should we pay somebody to fill tanks? And everybody's used to it. And suddenly everything became self-serve. But there was a time when, there was no self-serve, and then there was partial self-serve as the transition went on. I'm old enough to remember that, but as I said before, I'm old enough to remember that seeing signs on the gas stations that said no gas, or literally seeing lines that would stretch for a half a block or two blocks or three blocks down onto the street. Some lanes in the actual traffic street were closed down because it was a gas line. And sometimes you'd stay in that gas line and then you'd get to the pump and they'd say, sorry, we're out of gas. It was a real crisis. It was an energy crisis. It was a gas crisis. It really was. I remember it. Like I said, I wasn't involved in it. I wasn't driving. I wasn't waiting in that line. I wasn't having to devise my strategy of when to get gas. I was just a very little kid who was observing it. And I'm sure that it was a pain in the butt until it was solved, until it was ended. Whether it was a real shortage or not, I still don't know. I should do that. That's my next little research project. Was the gas shortage of the 70s real? Was there really a worldwide gas shortage, or was it created for some political reasons or some pricing reasons? All we heard about was OPEC, which was the oil producing body. OPEC was the key word. But there was a real energy crisis and a real gas crisis in this country in the mid 70s. And there were lines, and it sounds crazy, I know, to think about that, of gas stations not getting gas, not having gas in their tanks to the point where they just said, don't come here, we have no gas. But that was the reality of it. So this conflict, this controversy, this relationship with oil and gas in the United States and the world and the producers of it has been going on for decades, if not centuries. I don't even know how much, but certainly since the 40s and 50s, when all of a sudden cars became such a major part of the American lifestyle. After World War II, so many things in this country changed because of the prosperity. You know, people were moving out to the suburbs, but living in the city, yes, they could take transportation, public transportation, trains, buses, but then people were prosperous. I'll buy a car and drive to work on my own. I have to worry about a train schedule getting home. You know, that's a pain in the butt. I used to do that. And you had to be really, okay, I've missed that train. I'm gonna wait another 45 minutes to get home. So we became, oil dependent, I would say, from the 50s. So say that's 75 years or 50s. That's, 80 years. No. Hello, I'm sorry. Yeah. Say some of the 40s when the cars really started. So let's just say 80 years just to be safe. It's been a major part of our daily life dealing with gas prices, and they've gone up and they've gone down. They've gone up and they've gone down. And a lot of times they go up for no reason. Of course, because we use it so much, a lot of states, especially like here in Illinois and California, because the use is so much that, states are looking for any ways to generate money. And so in places like Illinois that has, money problems, California, huge state. You go to California, even when gas prices are low, they're high in California. 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, they were $5 a gallon. I couldn't believe it when I went to California. $5 a gallon. I can only imagine what it is now. It's got to be over 8 or 9 or 10. It's got to be pretty close to it. So my point is that it's sticker shock. Even when I'm going to fill up my half a tank now, I'm like, whoa, what used to be 25 is now 38, 40 for a half a tank, or close to, or maybe, well, a little less than that, but it used to be, it's in the mid 30s when it used to be 20. And if there are those times when I'm busy and I don't go and I let it go to a quarter of a tank, wow, I'm sitting there going, wow, $49? Wasn't expecting that. That's a big hit. That's a big hit. Like I said, I'm still using the same amount of gas, but I'm trying to at least, by filling up at half a tank, I'm stopping more often. But I'm trying to just, whether it's just a delusion or an illusion on my part to make it look like I'm not taking that big hit. I'm still using the same amount of gas. I'm just going more often to fill it up. So it just looks better on the pump when it says $20 as opposed to $45 or $49. Yeah, last week or so, I let it go to about a quarter of a tank left. And I was like, yeah, it's probably going to be about $40. And it was like, it was $49.86. I'm like, well, it's pretty much $50. I'm like, wow, that's a big deal. That's $25 more than it used to be. That's a meal. That's real money. And what I'm saying too is what I have found is that not only am I checking, am I looking at gas prices more now as I'm driving down the street. A lot of times you go, okay, well, you know, what's another dime? Who cares? But now it's not a dime difference between one gas station and another. Sometimes it's 20 or 30 cents. Well, if you're going to put in, you know, 9 gallons, yeah, okay, 30 times, you know, 9 gallons times 30. I know that's $3. That's not that big of a deal, but it is if you're going on a regular basis. I'm going to save $3 if I go to this gas station as opposed to that one. Well, but if you keep doing that, those $3 add up. So I'm checking now. I'm still not running out of gas. I'm still not being stupid and saying, well, I'll find another gas station for it's cheaper. I'm biting the bullet and just saying, okay, I'm just going to have to buy it. I need gas. I don't want to run out of gas. That's stupid. But I am looking now to see, oh, well, there's a gas station a little farther down that they usually have it a little cheaper. I'm going to save 30 cents. 30 cents is 30 cents. That turns into dollars. And on frequency, that turns into real money. So I'm checking gas prices more than I did, say, 6 months ago or a year ago. I'm checking the gas prices now. I'm shopping my gas, if you will. But the most interesting thing that I have found, because the gas has jumped so fast, so high, it was in the twos. I mean, it's gone up, like, at least here in the Chicago area, in Illinois. You know, we were in the low, we were like in the upper twos. And now it's in the upper fours. I mean, I've seen it for $4.50, $4.69, $4.70. So in some areas in the Chicago area, gas has gone up probably $1.75, or in some places even $2. That's a lot per gallon. That pump is flying now. The gas is still pumping at the same rate, but man, are those numbers on the price flying, aren't they? And so here's my point, really, is that not only am I shopping now for gas prices, but I do feel in many ways, aside from those places that we have to go, you have to go to work, you have to run errands and go to the store. There are certain places, but I also am finding now that I am not driving as much as I used to. Before I'd say, oh, or what I'm doing is I'm strategically deciding, well, I can go here and here because at the same time, I'm building in, you know, trips that I can kill two or three birds with one stone in terms of, well, this is on the way to that and this is on the way to that. So I'm not starting from home to there and back, home to there and back, and making three separate trips would use more gas. I'm using a little less gas going from a place that's closer to my next destination. So I'm being more strategic in when I'm going out, where I'm going, and going to some places that are close to each other so that the ride isn't as packing on the mileage and using up as much gas. And I'm also noticing that I'm just not going out as much. Just not driving as many miles. Let's go here. Let's just go here. It's not a part of the required travel that we have. I'm staying more in my required travel as opposed to then saying, well, I'm doing my required travel, going to get food, going to work, going places that you need to go to on a regular basis. That's a part of your daily or weekly routine. But then you say, well, now this is for fun. This is for that. This is for that. I'm not doing as much of that now over the last couple of months because I'm like, I don't want to use that much gas. And it's so funny. You don't think about that. And I never really thought about it until I was realizing like, well, you know, I'm not really traveling as much. And I think it's because of that sticker shock. And so while we, you know, when gas is cheap, we don't think twice about, well, let's drive out here this weekend and let's drive 100 miles, let's drive 50 miles and go some see this or go see that, or, you know, who cares? But now you don't maybe make those luxury those little trips or those little side trips or excursions to go somewhere. Oh, I will go visit our friends that live 30 or 40 miles away. You don't see them very often. Well, you go there a little more often. Well, now you don't. Because it's like, well, that's 60 miles that I didn't need to spend. And, you know, that, you know, on a regular basis, I didn't, you know, it's nice to see them, but I would maybe go there three times a month. And now I'm going there maybe three times every 2 months. A long drive. I'm not going, oh, let's go to the park there, or let's go here, whatever it is that you would do in your leisure time, aside from what you need. I'm finding that I'm not really doing that as much, because it adds on miles and it adds on gas usage, and wow, that sticker shock is real money. And so what's funny is the higher gas prices have really changed some of my older habits. Now, I'm hoping that this isn't permanent, and there will come a point then you say, okay, I got to bite the bullet because I want to do this and I want to do that. But in the short term, I've realized that I have curtailed a lot of my voluntary travel. I'm still doing my required travel that I need to do, work and food and other things. But I've noticed that since over the last almost 60 days now, or whatever it's been, since the prices for oil and gas have gone up so high, so fast, that I have cut down on some of my older driving habits. Well, let's go there this weekend. Let's go there. Let's go there. Let's go there. Not so much. Staying around the house more. And it's subliminal. I didn't go out. I don't know if I did it on purpose, but maybe in the back of my mind it's like, well, you know, I don't want to use too much gas. I'm using a lot of gas. When I'm going to that tank, wow, it's like 40. It's 45 a shot. It's 40. It's 38 a shot. Used to be 20. And it's more subliminal. Subliminal. Wow. Blah, 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 blah. But now it stopped being that, because it hit me. I'm like, yeah, we're not driving as much as we used to. And it's probably because maybe in the back of my mind, it's like, well, you know, it's close to $5 a gallon. That, as I said, boy, that price number, when you go to fill it up, as I said, when you hit that, the nozzle there, it's still filling the gallons of gas is still filling at the same pace. But man, that number is flying by, and when it stops, it's like woof. You know, so it's interesting now how I've noticed, at least. Have you noticed that you've changed your travel habits? Maybe there's some things you just can't change. And there are some required things, but I have noticed that those other things that we do voluntarily, maybe for fun, maybe for whatever, I've noticed that I've cut mine down, and I'm hoping that the gas prices will go down soon so that I can get back into that routine too, because it's fun to go and do your required things, but, you know, there are errands. There's a difference between errands and relaxation and fun, and I've noticed that I'm going less now. I'm not like just sitting in the house and being bored. I'm very happy to be around my house. I mean, I you know, there's enough to do, but I have noticed I'm not just doing errands and that's it. I'm doing other things, but I know that I probably will be doing a little more, but I noticed that I've curtailed some of that ancillary stuff, which I may have done without even a thought. And whether it's in the top of my mind, the back of my mind, that the price of gas, I think, is changing some old driving habits without even knowing it. So hopefully this all will be resolved soon. And I wouldn't be surprised, In the back of Donald Trump's mind somewhere, being the developer that he is, the land developer, remember how he was talking about Gaza a couple of years ago and how, why, it's a beautiful area and the land, it's right on the beach, and oh my gosh, I could see, you know, having this being redeveloped as some resort place. I'm sure, and people, and, you know, he took a lot of flack for that. I'm sure in the back of Donald Trump's mind, he would, well, he might not live long enough to see it, but I'm sure in the back of his mind, he's doing this and looking at that area there and the Strait of Hormuz. That's all we're talking about is the Strait of Hormuz. And I guarantee you that in the back of Donald Trump's mind, he's saying, you know, there's going to be a time sometime in the future, maybe it's 15 years, maybe it's 20 years. But, you know, if this Iranian thing goes the way we would like it to go and Iran is no longer, you know, kind of a threat, and that Strait of Hormuz is open and gas is flowing and ships are flowing through there and it's no problem, I bet you that Donald Trump in his vision for the world and his always, this is going to work, this is going to work attitude, and his role as a, in his mindset as a developer, I think he's looking forward to one day Carnival cruises or Princess cruises or Viking cruises saying, and don't forget our new Middle East voyage where you will cruise through the beautiful Strait of Hormuz or the Straits of Trump. As you go through the Trumpsylvania, you know, I'm sure he's, you know, in his mind, Iran will be called Trumpsylvania, and the Straits of Hormuz will now be a popular cruising destination in about 30 or 40 years. And Trumpsylvania will be a spot on that. You'll go and do a Middle Eastern cruise and you'll go to an Egyptian. And then your cruise ship on Viking will go through the Straits of Hormuz and you'll make a stop in Trumpsylvania. I think in the back of the mind, that's his end game. Someday, we will not only be getting our oil without any problems from the Straits of Hormuz, but we will be cruising through the beautiful Straits of Hormuz on our way to Trumpsylvania. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. Don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed episode number 517. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of my mind to your ears as we cruise through the Straits of Hormuz on our way to Trumpsylvania.